Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18. The residents of Jambudvit offer prayers. And I was asked by Manohar Prabhu to give a class on number 8, but I see that it's number 7 on the board, so we'll read both, 7 and 8. So it could have been worse, it could have been the other way around. But so we'll have two verses instead of one. So I'll just read the translation and purport of 7, since the Sanskrit is very difficult to read, the prose. Translation and purpose by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King, Lord Nrisimhadev resides in the tract of land known as Harivarsa. In the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I shall describe to you how Prahlad caused the Lord to assume the form of Nrisimhadev. Prahlad Maharaj, the topmost devotee of the Lord, is a reservoir of all good qualities of great personalities. His character and activities have delivered all the fallen members of his demoniac family. Lord Nrisimhadev is very clear to this exalted personality. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj, along with his servants and all the denizens of Harivarsa, worships Lord Nrisimhadev by chanting the following mantra. Purport. Jayadev Goswami's 10 prayers worshipping the incarnations of Lord Krishna, Keshava, contain his name in every stanza. For example, Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare, Keshava Drita Mina Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hare, and Keshava Drita Vamana Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare, and so on. The word Jagadisha refers to the proprietor of all the universes. His original form is the two-handed form of Lord Krishna, standing with a flute in his hands and engaged in tending the cows. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakara Satma Sukalpa Vriksha, Lakshavrite Susuravir Abhipalayantam, Lakshmi Sahasra Satasambrahma Sevyamanam, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. From this verse we learn that Govinda, or Krishna, is the Adi Purusha, the original person. The Lord has innumerable incarnations exactly like the innumerable waves of a flowing river. But the original form is Krishna or Keshava. Sukadev Goswami refers to Nrisimhadev because of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was put into great distress by his powerful father, the demon Hiranyakashipu, apparently helpless before him, Prahlad Maharaj called on the Lord, who immediately assumed the gigantic form of Nrisimhadev, half lion and half man, to kill the gigantic demon. Although Krishna is the original person, one without a second, he assumes different forms just to satisfy his devotees or to execute a specific purpose. Therefore, Jayadev Goswami always repeats the name of Keshava, the original personality of Godhead, in his prayers describing the Lord's different incarnations for different purposes. I will read verse number 8. I will read the Sanskrit. It's also in prose, but it's a prayer, so it's a little bit more easy to read than the previous one. And then we will read the word to word together and the translation and purport afterward. Om namo bhagavate narasimhaya namaste jas tejase avira birvava vajranakha vajradamstra Karma Sayan Randaya Randaya Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Svaha Abhayam Abhayam Atmani Bhujista Om Krashun. So this is a very important verse, and it's for all the Nishingarev Bhaktas worshippers that we all try to be. It's a good verse to memorize or learn. So we'll read together the word by word and the translation and purpose after. Om, O Lord, Namaha, my respectful obeisances, Bhagavate, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narasimhaya, known as Lord Narasimha, Namaha, obeisances, Teja Tejase, the power of all power. Avi Avir Bhava, please be fully manifest. Vajranakha, O you who possess nails like thunderbolts. Vajradamstra, O you who possess teeth like the thunderbolts. Karma Asayan, demoniac desires to be happy, demoniac desires to be happy by material activities. Randaya Randaya, kindly vanquish Tamaha, ignorance in the material world. Grasa, kindly drive away. Grasa, kindly drive away. Om, O my Lord. Svaha, respectful oblations. Abhayam, fearlessness. Abhayam, fearlessness. Atmani, in my mind. Bhujishtaha, may you appear. Om, O Lord. Kshraum, the bija or seed of mantras of offering prayers to Lord Nishimha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Nishimhadev, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. Purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.39, Sanat Kumara speaks the following words to Maharaj Prithu. Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya Karmasayam gratitam ugratayanti stanta tatvanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha shrotoganas tam aranam bhaja vasudevam. Devotees always engage in the service of the toes of the Lord's lotus feet, can very easily become free from hard knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, cannot stop the waves of sense gratification, although they try to do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Every living being within this material world has a strong desire to enjoy matter to his fullest satisfaction. For this purpose, the conditioned soul must accept one body after another, and thus his strongly fixed fruitive desires continue. One cannot stop the repetition of birth and death without being completely desireless. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami describes pure bhakti, devotional service, as follows. Anyabhilashita sunyam yana karmadi ava anavritam anukul yana krishna nu shilanam bhaktir utama. One should render the transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Unless one is completely freed from all material desires which are caused by the dense darkness of ignorance, one cannot fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, we should always offer our prayers to Lord Nrisingadev, who killed Hiranyakashipu, the personification of material desire. Hiranya means gold, and Kashipu means a soft cushion or bed. Materialistic persons always desire to make the body comfortable, and for this they require huge amounts of gold. Thus, Hiranyakashipu was the perfect representative of materialistic life. He was therefore the cause of great disturbance to the topmost devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, until Lord Nrisimhadev killed him. Any devotee aspiring to be free of material desires should offer his respectful prayers to Nrisimhadev, as Prahlad Maharaj did in this verse. So I guess that's why we should memorize the verse. Any devotee aspiring to be free of material desires should offer his respectful prayers to Nrisimhadev, as Prahlad Maharaj did in this verse. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gena Gena Shalakaya Shakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I think we're going to cut, there's two verses, but you know I prepared mainly number 8. So we'll try to, because it's too many, it would be too many points, too many topics to discuss if we try to do both verses in detail. So I'll focus mainly on number 8. So I think one of the main, I mean, there's several points that I kind of extracted from the verse and the purport. The first one is that Krishna is the source of all power. That's how it starts in the translation, that Lord Nrisimhadev is the source of all power. And we can see that, you know, all the good things that, you know, we kind of develop ourselves, good qualities, we can say that they're coming, you know, they're sparks from Krishna's potency, power, and good attributes. So some of the qualities that I wrote down that I feel are very important for us to develop and hope that Krishna manifests through us are strength. I'm talking about not just physical strength, you know, sometimes it's good to be able to lift some things, but it's mainly about mental strength. In Krishna consciousness, I think we use more our mental strength to focus and be determined and like that. And also spiritual strength, to really know how to surrender to Krishna, how to pray, like Prahlad Maharaj is praying in today's verse. And of course, something that we also use a lot is intelligence. We really need to have this potency of Krishna, of intelligence, how to choose the right things, you know, on a daily basis, how to study and understand the philosophy, like Bhagavad Gita. So intelligence is a very important aspect of the power of Krishna. Then determination, we have to always look for that aspect of Krishna's glory and see how it manifests in our own person. Enthusiasm, Prabhupada mentions very often that without enthusiasm we can't do much in Krishna consciousness. We have to be enthusiastic about our service, about getting up in the morning, about, you know, doing all the things that we do every day. Without enthusiasm we can easily get gloomy, depressed, you know, not wake up, everything is black, etc. We can become like the weather. So enthusiasm means there's always a sunshine is shining within ourselves. And then there's patience. We have to be very patient, you know, in Krishna consciousness. There's no shortcut, no easy way, no cheap ticket. Not like in India where you go to darshans and then you get these expensive tickets and then you can go quicker to see the Lord. In real Krishna consciousness, there's no shortcuts. You have to wait the time it takes for purification, for Krishna revealing himself, for, you know, things to manifest. You know, even our service, sometimes we're very eager to get something accomplished and we try to do it materially because we want it faster. But we can see in Krishna consciousness, especially in a project like Radhadesh, things manifest in their in due course of time, in their own sweet time. And sometimes for us it's a big challenge because we're a little bit impatient. We can't wait for 2, 3, 5, 10 years. You know, for sometimes it's a small thing, materially it's a small thing, but because it's in Krishna consciousness, it takes, you know, things take time to manifest. You know, sometimes I wonder, why don't we just get somebody from outside, they do it in 48 hours. And for devotees, it takes, you know, sometimes 10 years, 5 years, you know, for something which can be done in 48 hours. So sometimes we have to be patient because Krishna works in a different time frame in our spiritual development and even in how he manifests externally, you know, the movement, the whole external aspect of our Krishna consciousness movement. Then tolerance, that's very obvious. We have to be very tolerant ourselves for, you know, all the discomforts and problems that come to our way on a daily basis, coming from, we know, all the sources, from other living entities, from animals, from the weather, from, you know, so many ways that we have to be very tolerant with our own comforts, material comforts, and our own bodily pleasures. And here in the verse at the end, it was mentioning that materialistic people, they want to have a very comfortable situation. And when their comfort is disturbed, then they become very disturbed. You know, people in 1 second they will become angry if, you know, you bother their, you know, material comforts and their zone, material comfort zone. So we have to develop tolerance because constantly we will be tested like that. Then humility. Humility is a very good quality of Krishna that can manifest in us when we develop ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Okay, we could talk a lot about humility. It's a very big topic, and for devotees it's very important. Then we have courage and humor, some humor, to not be too, sometimes we take ourselves too seriously and we can't laugh about ourselves and we become too tense. So to have some humor and be able to have a good laugh once in a while is very healthy for the spirit, for the soul. And of course, to have loving relationships, affection, that's obvious aspect in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti yoga. It's one of the essential elements. And then on the other side, why I'm bringing this up is because, of course, it's mentioned in the verse about Lord Nrisimha being the source of all power. So these are elements that Krishna can manifest in us because that he's the source of all these things. You know, we can't have them independently from Krishna. Krishna is the source of strength, intelligence, determination, enthusiasm. So we can't separately, you know, develop them to the degrees that we need to develop them. But what I'm saying is because in the verse today, Prahlad Maharaj is praying to Lord Nrisimhadev to take away these material desires from his heart using his, you know, kind of very sharp instruments, his nails and his teeth. So in especially in Kali Yuga, this principle is very, very much prominent, that both the good qualities that I mentioned and also the negative qualities, which I can also mention, which we all have in our hearts, is a very, you know, every individual has these two tendencies. It's in Kali Yuga, the good and the bad, Krishna and Maya, they're within our own heart. And so to pray to Lord Nrisimhadev to, you know, vanquish, you know, day after day, year after year, all these bad qualities, these demoniac qualities or illusory qualities that come from illusory energy, which is also within our heart, then we really need to pray like Prahlad Maharaj is praying. In other ages, you know, some people were born like either 99% in goodness and pure and you know, God conscious. And gradually that diminished, of course. And nowadays, you know, everybody has some element of, you know, good qualities and bad qualities, more bad qualities most of the time than good quality. So we really have to work hard in praying to the Lord to help us overcome all these bad qualities, which I'll just mention very quickly, because if we get into each one of them, we could speak for hours and days. So lust is one of the bad qualities that illusion and this demonic tendency within us is manifesting a lot. How to enjoy our own senses, how to satisfy our own senses, you know, in big ways. Then you have anger. We get easily angry when people don't satisfy our desires, our needs, our, you know, whatever we want in life, and we become angry with them. And some people are constantly angry. I mean, you see some people in the street or something, and they're like, you know, they're like walking anger. whatever you would do to interact with them, they will just like give it to you, explode, you know. So anger is very bad quality, which we all have in our hearts. And illusion, of course, we get, you know, illusion is very, could be discussed in a very big way, because ultimately everybody's completely under illusion. And madness and fear, you know, fear is a very strong element, and it really kind of makes a lot of people decide basic things in their life. All kinds of choices are based on fear, and fear is not a very good quality. I mean, I see here in Belgium how, you know, because I'm doing communications a lot, so I read a lot of newspapers and see how people react, how the government, how the politicians react, how, you know, how they interact with the public. And here in Belgium, the element of fear is very strong, very, very strong. You know, they really put fear in people's minds through the media. You know, you have to be afraid of this, you have to be afraid of that. But what about this group or this people or this religion or whatever it is? You know, they might do this and they might do that, and people are constantly kind of under the influence of fear. You know, some people have it more than others. So somewhere other in Belgium, the element of fear is quite strong. People are very fearful of the difference, fearful of the of all these kind of things. Then of course envy, that's a very tough one. You know, we all have a lot of envy in our hearts. And we have difficulty to appreciate or be happy when others are happy, and just to higher or lower degrees. Of course, I'm not saying that we're completely envious and of everything and everybody, but we see it, you know, it manifests many times. Greed and doubt, lamentation. You know, some people are more prone to lamentation than others. Some people they love to lament, and this is a very strong negative influence on us. And then of course hatred sounds like very, very strong, but you know, we all have that to some degree or another. You know, we don't like to admit it, because you know, we think we're nice people, we don't really hate anybody or anything, but in small ways this comes out. You know it's like the opposite of loving. So we, you know, it's very much connected with envy, and then hatred comes in as well. But we see in the world, hatred is such a dominant force and make people do really horrible things. You know, like this, you know, in America, all these shootings, you know, people have so much hatred inside to such degree that they're willing to just go out and kill anybody and everybody, including their own mother. You know, it's like some horrible things happen in the world today, because hatred kind of takes over, and it makes you do, you know, some inconceivable things. You know, like also when there was this killing there were many killings in America this last year with guns. One of them was in Oak Creek in the north of America, of the United States, and somebody went into a Sikh gurdwara and just killed, you know, 20 or 15, 20 people just because of hatred. You know, there's no other reason. No other reason. There was no, like, you know, something happened or this or that. Just like hatred, just building up. And then they just explode in some, you know, killing, you know, innocent people just because they're different or you know, he doesn't like them or things like that. So hatred is a very demoniac and powerful element that Maya uses to, you know, guide us in the wrong direction. So that's why we need to pray to Krishna to help us get this power, you know, that he manifests all these good qualities, because he's the source of all these good qualities. So by praying to Lord Nrisingadev, who is the source of all power, we can try to develop these good qualities, and also by praying to Lord Nrisingadev, we can try to diminish, destroy, and eventually, ultimately, that's what the whole verse and purport is about, is to completely eradicate all the material desires, all the demoniac tendencies. So some of us have more degree, I mean to higher degree, some to lower degree, but we all have some of these, you know, demoniac desires, as it's as they are mentioned in the verses today. And Lord Nrisingadev is going to be the one we have to pray to help us develop the good, the good quality, but also to kind of crush and destroy all the negative quality. So that's more painful because, you know, we might be attached or, you know, we have these bad qualities and we don't want to admit that we have them. So we pray to Krishna to take them out. So then Krishna tries to help us to take them out. But, you know, we don't want to acknowledge it so easily. We don't want to accept it so easily. So it might be a little painful and difficult because otherwise Krishna didn't need nails and teeth like thunderbolts. So if Krishna needs nails and teeth like thunderbolts to destroy demons like Hiranyakashipu, and he also needs it to destroy our demoniac desires, tendencies, because they're very kind of rooted and mischievous and kind of horrible. So we need a strong approach to get rid of them. It's not like blowing on a abscess, you know, or patting some difficult thing on the back that it will go away. You have to really dig into it and uproot it. So I thought that was one of the important points, that the demoniac desires which are mentioned here, which can be very, you know, demoniac can be obviously the very negative things, the, you know, ignorance and to some level passion. It's very obviously there. More influenced by demoniac kind of thinking. But here it goes much further. You know, it talks about fruitive activities, and which can involve even karma, you know, things in goodness. So, you know, even goodness, sense gratification. So we can go from a very low level of ignorance and passion and how we want to get rid of all these bad qualities. But then we can see that at a higher level, even in goodness, we have to work at it and be careful. I was thinking this morning, you know, it's like when we start spiritual life, it's like going around, it's like a race, a personal race, not a race with others, but a personal race to come to the goal of, you know, anyabhilasita sunyam. So we have like three laps to do, you know, big, on a very big race. So the first lap is obviously getting rid of all the ignorance that we have in our hearts, all the really bad things. And then the second lap is, you know, trying to overcome passion, so much passion, desires, you know. And then you get into the third lap, which is like the most nice lap. It's like in goodness. But the danger when you're in the last lap and you see that, you know, in goodness you see the goal, you see the end of the race, and everything's very clear and everything. But there's a danger there also, that we might get distracted, you know, by maybe things on the sidelines, and instead of going forward, we start going in circles, or we go to one side and the other. And as it's mentioned, you know, eventually, we can, in this world, we cannot remain in one mode, you know, eternally. You know, even if we come up to goodness, we got rid of all the, you know, worst qualities. Then, even in goodness, you know, at one point we will kind of fall down. It's the nature of material existence that we'll start to walk backwards somehow or other, you know, on this kind of race. So even in goodness, we have to apply ourselves and continue with the process very seriously. Continue to pray to Krishna. No question that when we're in goodness, oh, everything's fine. We don't need to pray to Krishna so much. It's more easy. You know, everything's nice. I'm well situated. Everything's good. Everything's nice. And then we get distracted like that, and then we don't make so much progress, or we don't make any progress. That's the danger, to not make any progress. Because even if it's slow, even if we're in that third lap and we start to walk a little less fast, and we don't run so much like we were running from, you know, ignorance and passion. As long as we're making progress, then everything's fine. But when we kind of get too distracted, you know, Srila Prabhupada makes that gives us that warning throughout his books that you know, we can easily get distracted in goodness, you know, forgetting about the goal, what's the real, you know, coming to the end of the race and coming to this point of pure devotional service, free of all material desires, no material desires, because we're nicely situated, we feel comfortable, everything is good, we're not doing any horrible things like that. I just wanted to read from Bhagavad Gita as it is in chapter 3, text 20:19. Srila Prabhupada, you know, mentions this very briefly, this point, how we can become attached also to, you know, to be nice, to be in goodness. In the purport, it says, the Supreme is a personality of Godhead for the devotees and liberation for the impersonalist. A person, therefore, acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work is certainly making progress toward the supreme goal of life. Arjuna is told that he should fight in the battle of Kurukshetra for the interests of Krishna, because Krishna wanted him to fight. To be a good man or a non-violent man is a personal attachment. But to act on behalf of the Supreme is to act without attachment for the result. That is perfect action of the highest degree, recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So, even, you know, that's the whole idea of the Bhagavad Gita, how to overcome even, you know, arguments in the mode of goodness, you know, how to really surrender, how to really become pure. So, I think that's, you know, that's very clearly one, you know, that's the main goal that we all have personally, to come to this point of pure love, pure devotional service. But also as a movement, as a society, that's the main goal of ISKCON, is to really, you know, have devotees who come to this level. Even if, you know, Srila Prabhupada, and I'm sure many of the acharyas have mentioned it also, that even if one devotee of those who have taken up to the process of Krishna consciousness come to the level of pure devotional service, then the whole mission is successful. So what to speak if a movement, if a tradition can have dozens, hundreds, thousands of persons who come to this highest level? That's the real success of ISKCON, of Krishna consciousness. Not so much that we have so many people or so many facilities. It's good to bring people to goodness, but if they are still attached to this world, if they're still attached to material comforts or material life, or if they still have some attachments, then it's mixed devotional service. And it's nice that people come to goodness. That's like a secondary aspect of Krishna consciousness and ISKCON, that people gradually come to a more human level and more, you know, kind of in goodness. So that's great. But that's not the main goal of ISKCON. The main goal of ISKCON is to get, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands, maybe in the future millions of people to the highest platform of Krishna consciousness, and that they can all be freed from this material world. That's the real success, the real mission. And the other mission is how, okay, we manage, okay, so many people, so many facilities, so many things, which might not be at that level yet, or who are, you know, at in a more human level with material desires still in the heart, and people trying gradually, or, you know, to practice Krishna consciousness. We try to take care of everybody, but we shouldn't get distracted. Okay, everything's nice. People are, you know, that's it. That's the goal of Krishna consciousness. People become nice, and then we forget the ultimate goal, the goal that is given to us by the acharyas and by you know, the scriptures. They remind us constantly that there is that final goal, destination. And the success of ISKCON will be how many devotees can actually come to that level. You know, that many, many can achieve that. Another point which was very interesting in the purport is the point of enjoyment. I think Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear that enjoyment is such a strong tendency in the living entity, in the material world, how to enjoy to the full satisfaction, you know, the senses, and you know, to be really, you know, fully materially satisfied, enjoying this world. And I think that's, you know, in my understanding, that this enjoyment is because the living entity's natural constitutional position is to seek for bliss, for ananda, and in the spiritual world there's this spiritual enjoyment constantly, and so in this material world it takes perverted reflections. There's different degrees, of course, of covering up this pure desire to be in bliss, to enjoy with Krishna. So it's covered by different degrees of the modes of material nature, and it takes more or less perverted reflections. So that's why we cannot really get rid of the enjoying tendency. You know, many times we try to, we think, you know, this kind of impersonalist or yogi type of nature tendencies to want to get rid of enjoyment altogether. It's in Krishna consciousness, that's not our process, and ultimately we cannot. So our process is more about how gradually to change the object of enjoyment from the senses, personal enjoyment, liberation, sense gratification, etc., to the satisfaction of Krishna and Krishna's senses and Krishna's enjoyment. So it's not about stopping it, but about redirecting it. And you know, we can check every once in a while how much we are giving up our own sense gratification desires, and how much we're willing to sacrifice for Krishna and please Krishna's senses, and how much we're becoming happy by that. You know, it's not a kind of like forceful thing, but it's something that we develop as we become more mature in Krishna consciousness. So we know that some, you know, they, like impersonalists, they try to stop altogether this enjoyment tendency. So that's why many times Prabhupada glorifies, you know, sometimes Prabhupada glorifies impersonalists, those who try to, you know, detach themselves from material enjoyment, sense gratification, and all that. And then sometimes, of course, they're mentioned equally to the fruit of workers. It's also material attachment, it's also demoniac, whatever. So then both sides are presented, but obviously there's a difference between those who try to renounce material enjoyment and those who are fully in it. So those who are trying to stop it, you know, they have this wrong idea that ultimately it's about no enjoyment, no bliss. So it's almost like, you know, you're punishing yourself. It's, you know, no bliss, no enjoyment, no bliss. But it's not natural, because the soul wants to enjoy it, wants to have bliss. And even those who take to this, stop the enjoyment tendency, they either kind of fall down again within this life to some type of material enjoyment, even if it's very, you know, kind of humanitarian and very, you know, kind of some type of enjoyment in this world. Or even if they leave this body and they're in this very strong, you know, kind of renunciation of enjoyment and achieve so-called liberation, impersonal liberation, they go to a position in which they will ultimately come down again. They will, you know, even in the Brahmajyoti, even in this impersonal aspect of Krishna, the souls come back down, because unless we find this pure relationship and enjoyment with Krishna, the soul will not be satisfied, neither in this world, neither in the Brahmajyoti, you know, somewhere floating in Krishna's effulgence like that. So we need to come to this point of gradually and at one point permanently transferring our heart, our consciousness, our desires towards Krishna, to Krishna's enjoyment. And that's what we're all here for. We try to do on a daily basis. Some of us are a little bit more practiced at it, more advanced, and have had much more realizations. Others are just beginning, and we all come from different backgrounds with different, you know, different levels of this race of laps. You know, some of them might start from the second lap, some might be already in the third lap, some might be very close to the touch line, but doesn't mean they made it. So they still have to follow the process and continue with Krishna consciousness. So my understanding is that true liberation is to only desire to partake in Krishna's enjoyment. That's the true liberation, that we only desire to partake in Krishna's enjoyment. That's very difficult. Then you really give up your enjoyment. Your only desire is to partake in Krishna's enjoyment. And of course, Krishna's enjoyment is huge because it's unlimited. You know, Krishna's spiritual world is unlimited. Lord Chaitanya's mission in this world is unlimited. Krishna's seva is unlimited. Radha Gopinath seva is unlimited. Everything is unlimited. So if we partake in Krishna's enjoyment, then it's also full of variety, full of bliss. It's not like something, you know, limited and rigorous and you know, dry and unpleasant. So it's you know, you really, but you have to have that faith and that, you know, that conviction and purity to make that step slowly, and at one point you're there, you're fully in partaking in Krishna's enjoyment, sometimes without even realizing. You know, it's like, as I said, when you come to the third lap in goodness, then everything's very nice. So sometimes you might just, you know, be walking very slowly and very happily in the last lap, and you might even cross the destination, you didn't even realize it, because that, you know, of course the mood of passion and, you know, all these things that are the lower tendencies are gone long time. So then you might, you know, be already there without even realizing. But you know, that's why we need somebody to help us to make sure that we're going in that direction, because we can easily, in goodness, you can easily get distracted. Everything's nice, everything's good. We see that a lot in, you know, in India, when people, because people practice spiritual, they're religious by nature, but the tendency in India is that everything's nice, I know everything, I know Krishna, they know everything, because they are kind of pious by nature, so they're in this kind of, they're in this last lap, in the goodness lap. But you can easily get this, you know, distracted and just turn in circles. You know, you're in the last lap, but you're not there. So you just turn in circles, or you go sideways, back and forth. So that's what the Krishna consciousness movement, the acharyas, the process is to make everybody come to this final lap, the final, finish line, like when you see in the Olympics. Until they cross that, then they don't have relief. They will only have full relief when they've made that final cross of the final. So if there are any questions or comments, there's, you know, they're very interesting topics that we could talk for hours and days, but I'm sure you have some realizations and ideas you might want to share with everybody. Possible, yeah. Yeah, what you do externally as a process has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, in the sense that Krishna consciousness is an internal process. So even if you take up to the process of externally of Krishna consciousness, if in your heart you have desires to enjoy, or you have desires to, you know, get liberation, and you don't, and those desires don't change, and don't become purified, you don't progress, then you're not really practicing Krishna consciousness, because your desire is something else. You know, if you change from that, the moment you change from that, then you're internally and externally practicing Krishna consciousness. If you're externally practicing Krishna but you want liberation, then okay, Krishna will give it to you. Krishna satisfies everything, but it has nothing to do with the real Krishna consciousness. You know, he facilitates it. He gives it to you. Whether you do it in an external aspect of so-called chanting Hare Krishna or meditating or whatever you do, but if your desire is to get liberation, then it's not to please Krishna, it's not to serve Krishna, it's not to partake in Krishna's enjoyment. It's about your own salvation, your own, you know, liberation. So even if you chant, you can be in that desire, have that desire in your heart. But it's not wrong to have the desire and change it, and, you know, and gradually lose that desire. So in other words, you could even have the desire in the beginning and at the end become a pure devotee, like it's mentioned here in the purport. But if you don't change and if you remain with that desire, then Krishna will fulfill it. But you didn't really get Krishna consciousness, even if though externally you're chanting or whatever. So there has to be an internal process. There has to be some, the heart and the consciousness have to follow that external process. You know, at one point, especially when you come to the higher levels. In the beginning, we're a little, you know, mechanical, forceful, because we just want to get out of ignorance and passion. So we're very happy when we're not influenced by all these negative, horrible things like lust and anger and greed and this and that. So we think that's like a big progress. But in goodness, there's still a lot of, there's a lot, even passion and goodness, when things become more relieved, there's still a lot of work to do. That's where the process is so packed, because it's meant to take us to the highest level. It's not just meant to bring us to goodness. And sometimes some religious traditions, their goal is to bring people to goodness. That's okay, but it's not, you know, one thing is to come to goodness, another thing is to come to spiritual perfection. It's two different things. So Krishna consciousness can bring you to goodness, but it's meant to bring you much more than that. And here, like liberation and fruitive activities are kind of merged together. Many times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're kind of both considered, equal. Sometimes it's very clearly distinguished between those who are, you know, karmis and those who are, you know, looking after liberation. You know, they're more elevated and this and that. But sometimes sometimes pure devotees, they discard it as being the same, no difference. It's not the right desire. Whether you're full of material desires or you have this strong desire to stop, you know, material enjoyment and liberate it and this and that, it's still not a big difference for a devotee, for a pure devotee. For us, maybe it's a big difference. That's why sometimes for us it's difficult to relate to people who are spiritually, you know, kind of potent, but who have an impersonalist goal, desire, liberation. It's difficult because, you know, they might have a lot of good qualities and a lot of spiritual credit to them, but they don't, you know, they're not looking for that love for Krishna, service to Krishna, you know, enjoying with Krishna. That's not in their goals, spiritual goals. Any comments from that side? No? So Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanande.